Today is Friday, January 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, Iraq says it has requested the United States devise a mechanism for withdrawal of American troops from the country. And U.S. officials indicate that the reason a Ukrainian jet crashed in Iran may have been the result of a missile strike. So, what are Iran's missile capabilities?
Well, the Iranians have been investing in ballistic and, frankly, cruise missiles as well for a long time. And it's really over the past couple years that they're beginning to see kind of some real fruits from all that investment and all that labor.
Those stories and more next. Iraqi Prime Minister Abdel Abdul Mahdi asked U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to devise a mechanism for withdrawal of American troops from the country, the Prime Minister's office said on Friday. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo spoke to reporters today, saying that the conversation wasn't exactly as described.
We are happy to continue the conversation with the Iraqis about what the right structure is. Our mission set there is very clear. We've been there to perform a training mission to help the Iraqi security forces be successful and to continue the campaign against ISIS, to continue the counter-Daesh campaign. We're going to continue that mission, but as times change and we get to a place where we can deliver upon what I believe and the president believes is our right structure with fewer resources dedicated to that mission, we will do so.
Joining us now from the State Department is VOA's Cindy Sain. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Steve.
So, Cindy, can you give us any clarification on what exactly the request was, since General Milley from the Joint Chiefs of Staff says the U.S. troops weren't going anywhere?
Right, exactly. I wish I could, Steve, but I'm hearing exactly what you heard Secretary Pompeo say, and it wasn't exactly a denial of what the Iraqi Prime Minister said. He did say that we're happy to continue the conversation about what the best structure is, indicating that there may indeed be some conversations going on about at least moving U.S. troops around within Iraq. And Secretary Pompeo, again, went on to say something interesting, that he's having conversations with NATO foreign ministers about a bigger role for NATO in the Middle East. And we've heard President Donald Trump also saying that he wants NATO to play a bigger role. So some experts that I've been talking to are saying that perhaps it looks like there may be a movement afoot to reduce the presence of U.S. troops and to try to have Europe and NATO play a bigger role.
Secretary Pompeo said those discussions were taking place today. Do we know who from NATO he's speaking to?
No, I do not have information exactly. I know that there have been a lot of contacts this week. The British Foreign Secretary was here, but I'm not sure exactly who is. We don't have readouts yet of who might be at the State Department on Friday.
VOA Cindy Sain reports for us from the State Department. Thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Now, at the same press conference, U.S. Secretary of Treasury Steven Mnuchin announced that the Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control is issuing new sanctions against Iran.
First, the president is issuing an executive order authorizing the imposition of additional sanctions against any individual owning, operating, trading with, or assisting sectors of the Iranian economy, including construction, manufacturing, textiles, and mining. And let me be clear, these will be both primary and secondary sanctions. The EO also allows us to designate other sectors in the future as Secretary Pompeo and me think is appropriate. Second, we are announcing 17 specific sanctions against Iran's largest steel and iron manufacturers, three Seychelles-based entities, and a vessel involved in the transfer of products. As a result of these actions, we will cut off billions of dollars of support to the Iranian regime, and we will continue our enforcement of other entities. Third, we are taking action against 8 senior Iranian officials who advanced the regime's destabilizing activity and were involved in Tuesday's ballistic missile strike.
European foreign affairs ministers reiterated their support for the nuclear deal brokered with Iran and expressed concerns Friday that the escalating tensions in the region could lead to a resurgence of the Islamic State's activities. The EU's top diplomat, Josep Borrell, called the urgent meeting in Brussels after the United States' killing of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani in a drone attack in Iraq on January 3rd. Tehran responded earlier this week with a missile strike against Iraqi bases that house U.S. personnel. U.S. President Donald Trump is publicly voicing suspicion that Iran may have accidentally shot down a Ukrainian airliner. Iranian officials have maintained that the Boeing 737-800 at an altitude of 2,400 meters suffered a catastrophic engine failure early on Wednesday local time. All 176 people on board the plane for Kiev died, including 63 Canadians. But government sources tell VOA that U.S. officials have examined satellite data and imagery, leading them to believe the airliner, just after taking off from Tehran, was hit by a Russian-made surface-to-air missile after being targeted accidentally. Canada's government and the British government are among those who say it appears a Russian missile caused the plane to crash. Russian officials, however, say that such statements are premature before the crash is fully investigated. International Edition's Lori London spoke to VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman to learn more.
Well, we have the intelligence community in the West overwhelmingly stating that there is quite a bit of evidence that this plane was hit by a missile. What U.S. President Donald Trump and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau did mention in their remarks about this on Thursday is that it appears to have been an accident. As you know, Lori, there was a lot going on in the airspace over Iran and Iraq right before this plane took off on Wednesday, that missile attack from Iran into Iraq, and the Iranians were obviously on alert for a retaliatory attack, and the theory is that something went horribly wrong, that someone in Iran thought that this domestic airliner that had just taken off, Ukrainian International Airlines Flight 752, was a threat to Iran. While it was climbing, it was hit by one or two surface-to-air missiles.
You would think that there would have been some communication or collaboration between the international airport in Tehran and the military that was conducting these strikes?
Not necessarily. The civilian and military aviation communication systems are quite different, but obviously you would have thought that whoever was in charge of anti-aircraft batteries or these missile systems would have known that that was airspace where passenger airliners take off and land. There's also a question of whether it was prudent for commercial aircraft still be flying in and out of Tehran and perhaps Baghdad while all this was going on.
True. So what's next for this situation as far as whether it be just getting the actual investigation underway or any sort of retaliation?
Well, there is an investigation underway. It is being led by the Iranian authorities. They are talking about cooperation with Ukraine, with Canada, and with Boeing. The president made remarks that he'd like to see the black box, the data from the aircraft, which have been recovered, turned over to Boeing. No indication from Iran that they're going to do that. They've also said to a high degree of skepticism that while they've recovered the black boxes, that they appear to be damaged and some of the data is missing. How convenient, right? If you're trying to cover up something like this. Now, there have been some statements late on Thursday from the Iranian Foreign Ministry saying that they do welcome other nations cooperating with them in this investigation, but there's a considerable skepticism that we're going to have a transparent investigation if the Iranian government is in charge amid very strong suspicions that it was military of Iran that shot down this plane, perhaps accidentally.
That was VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman speaking to our own Lori London. Iran has denied allegations that one of its own missiles downed the plane. Now, to learn more about Iran's missile technology, I spoke to Thomas Carrico, the director of the Center for Strategic and International Studies Missile Defense Project. I started off our conversation by asking him how Iranian missile technology got to where it was today.
Well, the Iranians have been investing in ballistic and, frankly, cruise missiles as well for a long time. And it's really over the past couple years that that they're beginning to see kind of some real fruits from all that investment and all that labor. They've had some foreign assistance over the years from North Korea, Pakistan, and other places, but they're kind of coming into their own. And we kind of saw that with the strike in terms of the not just having ballistic missiles with a certain range, but having precision guided missiles. And so they seem to be hitting, you know, right in the middle of the buildings for these strikes. And my hypothesis would be that they were, you know, they used their precision guidance to good effect, which is to say to have a display, but to minimize American casualties or damage in the process.
Speaking of Iranian capabilities, President Trump in his address on Wednesday said that the United States has the best technology in the world, developing new technology. But what does this strike not only on the air bases in Iraq, but also on the Saudi oil fields that the United States has placed on Iran as the originators of the attack? What does these events say about Iranian missile technology and its overall capabilities?
So the both of those events suggest that they don't have missiles now with not just with range and payload, but substantial precision guidance, and that translates to a much more effective delivery system, much more effective weapon for conventional strikes, for non-nuclear strikes. In the past, we've mostly been interested in rogue state missiles, you know, and their prospect for carrying a nuclear weapon. But having, you might say, the diffusion of precision guidance out to states like Iran or maybe North Korea, that changes the game. The kind of capabilities that were the province, especially of the United States, and now to folks like Russia and China, are spreading out further, and that's going to put us at risk. They're going to be able to hold different things at risk for more calibrated, precise strikes, just as we do, you know, in the way that we throw Tomahawk cruise missiles into Syria or wherever in order to have a specific calibrated effect.
In terms of defense, how hard is it for the United States or other allies to defend against these kinds of missiles? Because when you look at, say, South Korea and the deployment of the THAAD missile system there as a deterrent for North Korea and Patriot missile defense systems in other places of the world to deter missile strikes, how good are the Iranian missiles and how good are the defense mechanisms to prevent against further attacks?
Look, in terms of regional ballistic missiles, we're pretty good at that. The Patriot missile system for both air and missile defense and the THAAD system, these have extraordinary test records and have been proven in combat on the Patriot side, not merely in the 2003 conflict where the Patriot intercepted every ballistic missile it engaged, but frankly over the past 5 years in the Yemen missile war. The Saudis and Emiratis, which operate Patriot, have shot down scores and scores of rockets and missiles that the Iranians have supplied their Houthi proxies. So there's a lot going on here. Of course, there's a whole lot of actual real-world shoot-downs on the part of the Israelis as well over the years from the proxies that the Iranians also supply in different ways, and so our missile defenses have gotten pretty good. Doesn't mean that it's easy, or that, you know, the combination of cruise missile and ballistic missile and UAVs don't pose a very challenging threat. But I think what you're going to see is that the evolution of active missile defense is going to evolve to cover that full spectrum of threats as well.
That was Thomas Carrico, the director of the Center for Strategic and International Studies Missile Defense Project, speaking to me from his office in Washington. On Thursday, at his first re-election campaign of the new year, U.S. President Donald Trump made the killing of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani a major theme. That same day, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a war powers resolution that would require the president to get congressional approval before carrying out any more military actions against Iran. The vote was mainly along party lines, with only a handful of Republicans siding with the Democratic majority. The White House responded by issuing a statement that read in part, quote, "The president has the right and duty to protect this nation and our citizens from terrorism. That's what he continues to do, and the world is safer for it," end quote. At his rally, Trump explained.
We got a call. We heard where he was. We knew the way he was getting there, and we had to make a decision. We didn't have time to call up Nancy.
Although Thursday's resolution is non-binding, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said it has real teeth. The Republican-controlled Senate will also consider a war powers resolution where its passage is less certain. You're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to scientists, nearly 800,000 years ago, a 2-kilometer-wide meteorite struck the Earth with such force that debris from the collision was flung over Asia, Australia, and Antarctica. What has long been a mystery is that the impact crater from the tremendous strike has never been found. Researchers led by Nanyang Technological University in Singapore say they have found what might be the location of the missing impact crater. After gathering geochemical, geophysical, and geochronological evidence, the researchers suggest that the crater is buried beneath the Bolaven Plateau volcanic field in southern Laos. The scientists say their evidence indicates that the crater is approximately 15 kilometers wide. A study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences details their findings. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. On Saturday, Taiwan's 23 million citizens head to the polls to decide if incumbent President Tsai Ing-wen or if Han Kyo-yu will be elected to the country's top office. It has been a rough campaign and comes after months of protests in Hong Kong, where many fear there has been an erosion of the one country, two system structure. Now, to get a preview, I spoke with Scott Harold, political scientist at the RAND Corporation.
All of the last polls before Taiwan closed the polling about 10, 11 days before the actual election suggested that it was really not a very close race, that President Tsai was cruising to re-election with anywhere from between a 19% to 35% lead in the polls. Your listeners, Steve, will want to pay attention to the fact that the vote on Saturday is simultaneously a vote for who should be Taiwan's next president, that there is also an election for the legislative yuan, or the legislature in Taiwan. And the consequences there, of course, are that if the Democratic Progressive Party, which currently holds both the executive and the legislative branch, were to lose control of the legislature, that would make the re-election of President Tsai much more fraught with difficulties in terms of executing her policy agenda.
What is the significance of the Taiwan election against the backdrop of the ongoing protests that we see in Hong Kong?
The significance of the election is, of course, primarily of significance for the people of Taiwan, who've worked so hard to build a really impressive democratic system, and which is the kind of system that people in Hong Kong envy. Of course, people in Hong Kong do have elections themselves, and as we saw in late November or in November, those elections can have consequences too, but not at the same level that people in Taiwan have. People in Hong Kong have not been able, for example, to move their chief executive to really respond to the concerns that many people in Hong Kong feel over, for example, police violence, state responsiveness, transparency, and accountability. Of course, I think for Taiwan, the consequences are not simply matters of particular policies, but also have consequences potentially for Taiwan's identity and place in the world. And in that sense, you know, Taiwan's successful construction of a prosperous, liberal, democratic rule of law order that is premised on the fundamental human rights of the people who live in Taiwan is extremely attractive to many countries around the world that recognize what Taiwan has done and enjoy partnering with Taiwan and want to see the people of Taiwan enjoy both security and an opportunity to participate in international society. There is, you know, the elephant in the room, or in this case, the dragon across the strait, if you will, which is Beijing and the Chinese Communist Party, which sees the example of Taiwan and thinks, boy, that feels awfully threatening.
Now, that was Scott Harold, a political scientist at the RAND Corporation. A mysterious pneumonia outbreak that has struck several people in China and has worried thousands more. The illness apparently stems from the same family of viruses as the deadly severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, which also originated in China. Chinese scientists say a new coronavirus is responsible for the outbreak in Wuhan, finding the virus in 15 of 57 patients. Now in South Korea, a 36-year-old Chinese woman is under isolation and undergoing treatment as well. Dr. Anthony Fauci is the chief of the National Institute for Allergies and Infectious Diseases, part of the U.S. National Institute of Health. He spoke with VOA Asia's Ira Melman.
Well, it's pretty clear right now that the Chinese authorities have identified a virus as the cause of this syndrome, which is characterized by fever and pneumonia with pulmonary infiltrates demonstrated on X-ray. The virus is a coronavirus, which is a class of viruses that range from causing the common cold to causing SARS. A new coronavirus several years ago caused the severe acute respiratory syndrome in China, which we refer to as SARS, as well as the Middle East respiratory syndrome, or MERS, which is described in the Middle East. Each of those two syndromes were caused by a relatively new virus within the broader category of coronavirus. Right now, we know that the Chinese investigators have made the determination that the syndrome in several of those individuals who have severe pulmonary disease and fever in China has been caused and is caused by a new coronavirus. The interesting thing about the current virus that we're seeing in Wuhan in China does not appear to spread, certainly not readily and maybe not at all, from human to human, because there have been no cases of infection of healthcare workers who were taking care of the people with this disease, which is unlike SARS, in which the healthcare workers were vulnerable to getting infected when they were taking care of people with this disease.
Is it possible for this type of virus to change so it does become contagious among human beings?
Well, certainly that's always a possibility, that a virus will adapt itself to better transmissibility from human to human, which is one of the reasons why the health authorities in China and in the surrounding countries are being very diligent and vigilant in screening people who are coming from China who have a fever and a possible syndrome that's compatible with this respiratory syndrome in Wuhan.
So I take it that the worry among the Chinese that the Lunar New Year is coming up and millions of people are going to be traveling on buses and trains and everything. So you say there's basically no worry about that now, right?
I wouldn't say no worry, but I would say it would be minimal, because what we're seeing now is no real indication that there's ready, efficient spread from human to human. But unless something changes now, and the virus does become much more amenable to spreading from person to person, the risk of big spread from feast days like the Lunar New Year are minimal. However, that does not mean that we should not be very diligent in our making sure that we are aware that this could happen.
That was National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases Director Dr. Anthony Fauci speaking to VOA Asia's Ira Melman. The commander of the U.S. Africa Command has ordered an investigation into the al-Shabaab attack this week that killed three Americans, dispatching two of his top generals Thursday to Manda Bay, Kenya. U.S. Africa Command said the U.S. Army General Michael Turello, the commander who oversees operations in the Horn of Africa, and U.S. Air Force Brigadier General Leonard Kaczynski, the commander's director of logistics, visited Camp Simba Base and the Manda Bay Airfield. And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our director, Jackson Vunganyi, and engineer P.J. Elliott, thank you very much for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great weekend.